Hello world, huh?
The green jacket is going north of the border. Mike Weir has won the Masters.
Oh, my goodness. Have you seen anything like that?
The wait is over for Canadian fans, and the dream is now a reality for Brooke Henderson.
And Corey Connors' day indeed has arrived. He's a winner on the PGA Tour.
A clutch up and down for Mackenzie Hughes. Oh, my goodness.
Time for The Golf Show with Brent Gunning and Sam McKee.
Many doubted we'd ever see it, but here it is. The return to glory
on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Look at that. First week with our fancy new intro. That's right, the golf guys, Brent Gunning and Sam McKee, but it's just me this week. Sammy deserving some well-deserved time off. I believe he's enjoying himself on the best coast, the West Coast right now. In lovely BC, Alberta, I don't know. He's out there. There's mountains. There's lakes. There's a couple of drinks, according to the Instagram stories. Looks like he's having a great time. We'll be back in the thick of things for the Open Championship next week. But today, I am riding solo here. Brent Gunning, just with you. I'll be here with you until 9. Of course, the golf talk is not done when I'm done talking today at noon. You want to tune in to RBC Off the Tee. That's with Ian Leggett, and that's across the Sportsnet Radio Network from noon until 12:30. Going to have a couple of my buddies join me today. John McCarthy, you hear him on the station all the time. Of course, he is a national golf writer for the Toronto Sun. Going to get John's thoughts on the tournament this week. And, you know, this week in particular in the world of golf is a really, really weird one. It's a great one. Obviously, you know, we're all kind of sitting here waiting for the major that's going to come next week. But whatever it is you like in the world of golf, you get it this week. Do you want like car crashy sideshows? Hey, we had the match, I don't know, part six. How many of these have we done now with Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers getting the best of Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady? If that's your thing, you got that on a Tuesday. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's the most enthralling bit of golf entertainment we get on the calendar every year. I'm going to tell you, I'm thrilled to watch two of the world's best play golf on a Tuesday afternoon. And that's exactly what I got to do at a beautiful, beautiful course. I think they were in Montana there. Always love seeing an amazing track that we just never would have seen. I guess we saw that at the Payne's Valley course that Tiger designed. We saw that at the kind of last iteration of the match there. So we got that. Now you've got your kind of regular PGA Tour stop. If Luke Liss leading the way gets you excited, then that's what you got at the John Deere Classic this week. He's got a one-shot lead on Sebastian Munoz. Maybe I'm burying the lead a little bit there because we've got a Canadian in the hunt there, Canadian Nick Taylor. He is tied for 10th. He is just 3 shots back of Liss. So obviously a lot of bodies between him and the leader, but not a lot of ground to make up. We'll see what happens this weekend, this afternoon, and this weekend in Illinois for the Canadian there at the John Deere Classic. But I'd say the thing that is kind of front of mind for most people in the golf world, obviously, again, you're sitting there thinking about the major that we're going to have next week. But over at the Scottish Open, it is a logjam of a leaderboard. You got tons of names you like. You got tons of guys you're used to seeing. John Rahm, the guy who's the most recent major winner, he's flirting around the top of the leaderboard. I think he dropped a shot on his first hole of the day over there at Scotland. And, you know, it's nice to have all of these different things. I am a sucker for Euro Tour golf, mostly just because of the time. I'm an early bird. I love getting up. I went for a nice run down by the lake this morning, and I love it when I can either, before I go or when I come back, get a little live golf. That's why the Ryder Cup, when it's in Europe, is always a favorite of mine. That's why the Open Championship is my second favorite major. Shocker. I love the Masters the most. I know, sue me. Not exactly the hottest of takes there. When it comes to the golf on the Euro Tour this week, though, that's the one you've got to watch. One, because you have so many guys that are over there already prepping for the major that we're going to get next week. But then it's also just a slightly different style of play. Now, I was shocked when I turned it on. You know, you expect the Scottish Open or the Irish Open or next week the Open Championship. And you expect these linksy courses with blustery winds everywhere. I'm looking. This is like a tree-lined, park-lined course. Yeah, they've got the tall fescues and they've got the undulating greens, but it's not exactly what you would have expected when you sit there and look at, you know, what you think of a golf course in Scotland, in Ireland, in the UK. And like I said, it's just kind of a smorgasbord of golf this week. Pick whatever it is you like, and you've got it. One thing I've got for you right now is my buddy. I've been lucky enough to tee it up with him once. I was lucky enough not to be out with him when he got dumped on in the rain this week. Boy, it's been blustery out there in southwestern Ontario. Joining us now on the Golf Show, national golf writer for the Toronto Sun, John McCarthy. Johnny, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
Fired up. You know, rare playing as a single for me. You know, I'm a very social golfer. Often I've got my group of buds. I'm rarely the single. So as I'm playing a single on the golf show, I'm happy to have you out. You know, first things first, do we get the shoes de-waterlogged? I know you got absolutely stuck in it out there. And there are a few things that remind you just how much you love golf than getting stuck in a downpour like that.
Yeah, that was my Open Championship preparation, I guess. I did get everything dried out, although my wife wasn't really crazy about having my golf bag and three golf gloves sitting in the front hall for a day or so, but it's all done, it's all dry, and I'm ready to go.
It's so funny how that works out. I think it wasn't last year, but the year before, it just seemed like right before every major, I had conditions that would kind of lead up to it. I remember right before I played at a U.S. Open, I made the mistake of getting out to an unnamed municipal course in Hamilton that didn't quite get the maintenance crew out there, and there wasn't a lot of fairways, so I felt like I was just hacking around in the rough, played in blustery winds right before a UK or the Open. So yeah, it's always nice when you can kind of get those little bit of course conditions for yourself. You know, heading into, I was kind of setting up the show about what a weird week this is for the game. You know, there's big Euro Tour stops every year where you have, be it in Dubai or Wentworth, or there are other big stops, but this is the one week where it really kind of gets slammed home to me of just, wow, yeah, if you want to see all the best guys, they're over in Europe. And it's just kind of it's a weird kind of situation we don't find ourselves in as North American golf fans that often.
No, that's true. And like you said, that you can watch whatever you want this week. You can watch golf all day long. And they're over at the Scottish Open preparing for the Open Championship. But it's also sort of, it's our preparation. We can wake up and try and watch golf as early as we possibly can. I've got it on in front of me here. Looks like Lee Westwood is, oh, he's in the rough on the right. No, it's down the middle. He's okay. But there's also the Champions Tour. They got the U.S. Seniors Open. And then on the PGA Tour, I kind of like some of these events because you get a real chance for somebody to sort of change their career and their life when you have all a lot of the best players playing somewhere else. It's sort of like an opposite field event feel. And so you have, you know, a chance for a life-changing event on the PGA Tour, a major on the Champions Tour, the Scottish Open. You really do have your pick of anything you want to watch.
Yeah, and then you have the true kind of like sideshow, depending on your perspective, car crash events too. Like you have the match earlier this week, you have that celebrity event going on in Tahoe. Like it really does kind of give you a little bit of everything. Let's kind of sit on the John Deere for a second. You know, you talk about guys who can have kind of life-changing wins. I think life-changing is probably overstating it a bit, seeing as how, you know, he's won on tour before and he's won on tour somewhat recently. But, you know, Canadian Nick Taylor sitting right there just three shots back heading into the weekend. You know, again, not to say that this would change his life, but boy, it would certainly provide him a ton of security if he was able to have a big weekend this weekend.
Yeah, I was thinking about Nick when I saw him moving up the leaderboard yesterday, and it's funny because he is the only Canadian of this generation of our players that already has two PGA Tour wins. So everyone else, you know, Hughes and Hadwin and Connors, they're all hunting for their second PGA Tour win. Well, Nick got his at Pebble Beach when he took down Phil Mickelson. I'm trying to remember if it was last year or the year before. This COVID year has been so weird. But he got his second win at Pebble Beach. And the interesting thing about Nick is he can contend on sort of any kind of course. He can play. He's had some good results on very difficult courses. He can also contend in these shootouts. And he's a very sort of a calm, quiet, demeanor guy, almost sort of in Corey Connors ilk as far as personality. But man, if he could get his third PGA Tour win, that puts him into a entirely different class. And you think about his game, he's such a good all-around player in that, you know, he's not as good a ball striker as Corey Connors, but he's a very good ball striker. He's not as good a putter and chipper as McKenzie, but he's a really good putter and chipper. So he's got sort of that overall game that can sort of show up on leaderboards a lot. And then if he puts a week together, as we know, he can win. And imagine that, a third win while the other guys are still sort of hunting for their second.
Yeah, it is funny. I think if you kind of just gave most people the fact and kind of laid out those four guys and said one of them has two wins, I don't know how many people would pick Nick Taylor correctly there for that. And you know, it is interesting what you touched on there too, because Hadwin kind of has, now he's been going through it a little bit, but it's funny you say that, because with Hughes and with Connors, it's the very apparent thing. And I'll even, you know, I'll include Brooke Henderson to this. It's like the way she drives the ball. It's like with all three of them, it's like there is this dominant skill that you immediately think of. And you know, even someone like myself who follows the game, you know, as closely as I do, I can't say when I think of Nick Taylor I think of anything other than a TaylorMade hat and the guy plays Mario Kart. Like it is weird that he's the one who has the two wins, but he doesn't necessarily have that kind of, I don't know, defining trait, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, if you're going to, unless you're one of these elite top 20 players, having an all-around game obviously is something that will help you show up on leaderboards and make sure you have your tour card. And obviously a third win will make sure he locks it all up. But also, you're right, though, about Mario Kart. Anybody that good at Mario Kart, I think, is dangerous on the golf course.
Well, and you talk about many different ways to win, you know, blue shells, bananas, red shells. Like there's a lot of things he could play around with there. I do want to ask you about the Olympic team. Canada's going to have great medal chances on both sides. You know, Connors and Hughes have proved they can get hot with the best of them. Obviously, Henderson is a, you know, top 5-10 player in the world at any given time, and Elena Sharp has proved she can compete on the LPGA Tour. It's just, the thing I keep going back to is the frustration I find with the Olympics. And look, I'm thrilled golf is back. I would not want to lose it. But it just feels like we're barely scratching the surface. Like you throw a team event out, and I'm not even asking, you know, these players to hit any more shots than they already do, but just find a way to kind of incorporate their scores into some team event. It just feels like it would just make the Olympics that much more exciting. You know, I think about, and obviously golf isn't swimming, but there's 10,000 medals for swimming and, you know, 50 meters, 100 meters and backstroke and breaststroke and front crawl, and, you know, any myriad of ways you can do it. And with golf, there is a stroke play for men and there's a stroke play for women, and let's go home and dust our hands of it. Like, it just feels like there's a way more exciting event just lurking beneath the surface.
No, I agree with you. And I mean, we certainly have our fill of stroke play 72 hole events throughout the golf calendar. So it would be, every time it's something different, you know, people do get interested. So if it was something different and it was the Olympics, I really think you would increase interest, not only from fans, but also from some of these players that sort of show a bit of a lukewarm interest in going over to the Olympics in the middle of a busy schedule. If it was something slightly more different, interesting, I think you might get a better buy-in from some of the players. And it's already, but the stroke play, it's not the best field in the world. It's not going to be a field like you're going to get at the Open Championship, because with only a maximum of, you know, most countries are sending two players. If you're in the top 15 in the world, you can send four players, but you're only going to get four Americans, so you're not getting the best on best competition. So if you're not getting that, you maybe do need something to spice it up a bit. And well, I was thinking, they're there 2 weeks anyway, so why not play the stroke play in the first week for both men and women, and then have a team event in the second week? And I know it's more golf for these guys, but I do think it's something that's interesting and they would consider fun. And I think it would definitely be better as a fan to give out, you know, four gold medals instead of two.
Yeah, and it's just me pounding the drum for, I need to see Brooke Henderson in a team event. She's maybe the most one of the most dominant athletes we have, and she's been and you know, I mean this nicely, but relegated on the sidelines of team events for her side of things there. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is so interesting with the idea of doing that, and it's always going to come back to the buy-in of the players, right? Like the idea of getting them there for the 2 weeks. I like you said, they're already there. It seems like you could do it. We're talking about the Olympics, I have to ask you, and I'm sure you saw this, Siwoo Kim, Sung J.M., skipping the Open. Now, I was unaware of why when I first saw this. So if you missed the story, they're going to skip the Open Championship because they, one of, if not the only way, is to get out of their mandatory military service is to win a medal at the Olympics. And I didn't realize that, and I was dumbfounded when I first saw it. But yeah, when you see what they have kind of going or what they have waiting for them if they're unable to medal at the Olympics, yeah, it seems like a pretty smart decision, all things considered.
No, I certainly agree. I mean, I'd have a hard time not rooting for them over anyone if you see them in the hunt, because talk about something that would change their life, because there's been several South Korean players that have gone back for the 2 years or so military service, and they have a very hard time. I don't think any of them have come out of it at the form that they've gone into it with, even with time to sort of reacclimate. It's just because it's such an important part in their development. I mean, Sung Jae-im is one of the best talents on the PGA Tour right now. He was world number, I think he's around 25, 27, but he was in the top 20 for a while, and he's one of the best ball strikers in the world. I watched him at the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne. He was teamed with Adam Hadwin, so I was following him for a round, and he's incredible. I mean, the guy can hit the ball as well as anybody in the world, so it would be such a shame for, as a golf fan, to miss the, you know, how he's in his early 20s. So it'd be a shame for him to have to leave for 2 years and then try and put it all back together when he comes back. I think John Rahm, when he was asked about it, he said, well, if I'm in third and he's in fourth, we can maybe talk about it. He says, we can come to some sort of agreement. He said, I like Korean food. We can maybe have a deal going.
I like that. John Rahm might want to not say that out loud anymore before he gets Sung Jae in like a ton of trouble. It feels like they might laugh a little less about that than you and I are this morning. I'm right there with you. And, you know, hey, it's the golf show. It's my chance to get uber golf nerdy. I always think of Sangmun Bae. I mean, he made a President's Cup team right before he had to go do his mandatory military service. And one of the last professional shots, it's seared into my brain. I can only imagine how he feels about it. It was like he was playing a Stanley Thompson design. He was playing the super elevated 18th tee or 18th green, and he hit a chip and it just rolled right back to his feet. And that was one of the last professional golf shots he ever hit before having to do that military service. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I'd be hard pressed to find somebody I'd want to see medal more than either of those guys. We do have the Open Championship coming up next week, but as I mentioned, the guys are in Scotland right now. What's more odd, what's more unexpected, Rory McIlroy struggling the way he did, missing the cut, or some guy just walking up and saying, give me that head cover, give me that 7-iron, taking it out of his bag while he's waiting to tee off on the first tee. That's one of the strangest incidents I could think of since what? The guy doing the bird call during Webb Simpson's US Open win. Like, I'm trying to think of stranger kind of fan moments than what we saw with McIlroy there over in Scotland.
That was bizarre, and it was almost more disturbing because of, like, it's less disturbing to have a guy run out in a skirt and dance around like he did at Torrey and hit a ball into the ocean, because, you know, it was the intention.
Yeah, how could I forget that?
this guy's intention is what we don't know, because he was it was strange to walk up and sort of so casually grab a club, and, I mean, even try that at your... Try that at your local Muni, and you're going to get dealt with harsher than he was dealt with at a European Tour event. So I think there's going to be somebody's going to have to answer for that, because, really, try that. Go to your closest golf course and take a club out of a guy's bag on the tee and see what happens to you. But I also think if you think back to Tiger Woods and Steve Williams, imagine someone trying to take a club out of Tiger's bag. I think Steve Williams would break him in two. But Harry Diamond looks like a lovely, lovely chap, but he doesn't look necessarily like he's Rory's body man out there.
Yeah, it wasn't the most confrontational. It was less, hey, stop that, and more, could you not? Maybe. Well, when you're done, how about you just put it back in the bag whenever you're done, whatever it was. Yeah, that was really just uncomfortable to watch. Like, it was just awkward. Like you said, there was a lot of kind of pensive nerves on the tee box, and I can't remember who was paired up with him, but, you know, he's part of the feature group there. It's other big names who are with him, and they're just standing around like, maybe I don't want to say anything to this guy, because, yeah, you don't know what's going through their mind. You know, looking ahead to the major next week, you know, McIlroy, obviously, he's always going to be a name that pops up heading into these majors. I don't know how much you read into the fact that he, you know, showed some pretty poor form this week, and I believe he missed the cut, but it just seems to me like just another kind of check against Rory, and I'm it's almost to the point where I need to see it before I can truly believe it in a major, despite how talented he is.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think it is going to happen one of these times where he does put it all together, but I don't think you can count on it or bet on it until it happens right now, because he's obviously not in the same form he was when he was winning majors. And then there's something about majors also that seems to sort of now get in his head. So I think we need to see it before we can count on it. And if I was making picks, I definitely wouldn't have him in there at the top of my list.
Yeah, I'm a Rory guy through and through, but we've done this dance. We've seen it so many times. You know, one guy who I think is maybe going to be the most interesting guy in the field next week, both to see what he shoots and see how the crowd handles him, is Bryson. I don't believe he's named a caddy or found one yet. That's just going to be a circus that's going to follow him around all next week. And quite honestly, I personally can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I was thinking a bit about him going over to an Open, and I mean, it doesn't seem to suit him, because he's a guy that likes to sort of take all the variables you can take out of the game of golf and break it down to, do this here, do this there based on the math. But you go over to the Open Championship, to links courses where it's the rub of the green, or, you know, there's luck involved. That doesn't seem to work well with his sort of philosophy on golf. But then I was wondering, like, is there a chance that one of these might not be this year at the Open, but he goes over there and sort of a light bulb does go on where he realizes there's a slightly different way to play golf, and he's got all the talent in the world and the power to play at the highest level he's already shown. But I wonder if maybe the breakthrough to make him the player that we sort of think he might be might actually happen at an Open where the luck plays in, and there's so many variables that all of a sudden maybe his computer mind fritzes out and he just has to play golf for a while, and he realizes that he's a pretty good golfer too.
That's such a good way to put it, because, you know, I know it's such an easy comparison and we kind of always fall back to it, but the thing that made Tiger Tiger, yes, he understood how to hit all the shots, and he was a computer kind of before Bryson was in terms of knowing what to do. But he was also such an artist, and he would try these things and the helicopter finish and shaping balls. And it feels to me like Bryson is just kind of completely lost touch with that aspect of the game. And it has to be inside of him for how talented he was before he became this iteration of itself. Like, I think that's a really good point about, like, kind of leaning on the artistry as opposed to just the kind of calculations.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, it's not just Bryson that has taken some of this artistry out of golf. If you look at a lot of the young players coming up, they're all trying to take out some of the variables, which is a good thing to do to score well generally day to day in golf. I mean, a lot of these players are now playing a single shot shape, especially off the tee, trying to take out the left side of the golf course. And it bodes them well week to week on the PGA Tour. I mean, they're getting the hunt. You can contend. But then you get to these venues like the Open Championship or even like Kiawah Island at the PGA, where all of a sudden you need every kind of shot that you can ever imagine, where that one shot that you've perfected or that what you've been trying to do week to week, it doesn't work out there. It doesn't work when there's a big wind, or you got to play it on the ground, or at Kiawah where you need all sorts of shots, which is why when, of course, it was a massive surprise that Phil could win, you know, in his 50s. But when you think about a course like Kiawah in those conditions, it demanded every type of golf shot known to man. And who has every type of golf shot known to man? Nobody has more golf shots than Phil Mickelson. So when you think of it in that light, it kind of makes sense that he could win there, which when you go to an Open Championship, you start thinking maybe if they get some weather in the wind, you start looking at some shot makers, some more creative players, instead of sort of the week-to-week contenders on the PGA Tour. And that's why we often have different favorites at an Open Championship than you do, at other majors.
All right, that's well put. There's a lot there that I'm going to pick up, because again, I'm flying solo here, so I'm gonna pick up some of what you just put down there when I let you go. But one last question for me, Johnny: if golf was played in a dome, I used to think for the longest time, like, there's no weather, there's no wind, there's no rain, it's just a dome. It's basically simulator golf, but you're actually out there playing it. I used to think Rory McIlroy would be the best player in the world if you just took out all of the elements, and if you want to include the fans in that. Who do you think that guy is now? Is it Bryson? Is it Rory? Is it somebody else?
Hmm. Well, I mean, Bryson obviously would be a contender there, but I think the fans coming back has actually hurt Bryson because he seems to it is such a sort of hysteria that he's brought on himself that the fans are only adding more to it. I mean, I think right now at this moment it's got to be John Rahm. He has shown that he is right now a cut above the rest, and he's doing well at the Scottish here. Every tournament he plays in now, and now he's the world number one. He is, I think he's the best player in golf quite clearly right now. And it's interesting, you think back at Rahm and his connection to the Mickelsons, and they all saw it coming because Tim Mickelson was John Rahm's coach at Arizona State, and then he left his coaching job at Arizona State to become Rahm's manager. And he only left being Rahm's manager because Phil needed a caddy, so now he's Phil's caddy. But Tim Mickelson obviously saw the superstar that he had at Arizona State. And then there's that story, I'm not sure if you've heard, about Phil making a bet with Colt Knost about when John Rahm came on tour, or not even came on tour, when he turned pro, he had no status on any tour. But Phil made a bet with Colt Knost that he would be in the top 10 within a year, which seems insane. You turn pro, you're a kid at a school, have not eligible on any tour, and he says he'll be a top 10 within a year. So he took the bet, and sure enough, with a few weeks to spare, John Rahm went from no status on any tour to a top 10 in the world within a year. And now he's the world number one. He's got all the game. He's got the artistry. He's got the power. And he's now got the mind for it. He's turned into a sort of a very mature golfer for his age, which you wouldn't have thought so 5 years ago. But he's the best player in the world. I think he wins in a dome, he wins on an island, he wins anywhere you put him right now.
Oh, that's well said. I did not know that story. I love that story. And knowing what we know about Phil Mickelson, if there's ever a way, you know, not that Rahm wasn't already endeared to that Mickelson clan, but you win Phil a bet, and boy, you're in the good books forever. So happy you brought up Colt, though. So absolutely love the job he's done. A breath of fresh air to the coverage, just like you were to the golf show this morning. John, thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate it, bud.
No problem. One last thing about Nick Taylor and Super Mario Kart. I did ask him as a golf journalist which character is the best to play with, and he says Toad. So if anyone's playing their kids in Super Mario Kart, you should select Toad if you want to finally beat your kids.
There we go. You heard it from Nick Taylor through John McCarthy. There he goes. John McCarthy, national golf writer for the Toronto Sun. Follow him on Twitter at John McCarthy Sun. Love, love, love getting John's perspective on stuff. Also, if you're just looking for a fun Twitter follow, little snark, a lot of humor, a lot of golf. You definitely want to make sure you follow him along there on Twitter. I'm happy to hear him say what he said about John Rahm there, because, you know, I could even go back to the kind of last time the Scottish Open was played and we were getting ready for an Open Championship. And yeah, that was a long time ago. That was 2 years ago. Rahm was ripping it up at this kind of, you know, run of tournaments this 2 years ago as well. Like, this is clearly an area he's very comfortable with, you know, with him being Spanish. The Seve comparisons are always going to be there. I think they're obviously a little overstated. But to what John just said about playing with artistry, you know, that's clearly a part of Rahm's game that he's very, very comfortable with. You know, he can drive the ball. He, you know, tee to green, he's as good as anybody. But he has these ability to pull off these little chip shots in big moments. We've seen him chip in two or three times when it's really mattered. We've seen him make how many big putts at Torrey now when it's really, really mattered. We've seen them at the Memorial as well. It's just a guy who knows how to win big tournaments. He's got the major under his belt. And yeah, he's going to be the betting favorite when all is said and done heading into the Open next week. And I'll give you a few bets before we get out of here today. Coming up next on the show, Stephen Hennessy, the deputy manager, editor for Golf Digest. But speaking of bets, he's host of the Be Right Bet podcast. We'll get his take on what's going on this week on the PGA Tour with the John Deere. And then, of course, look ahead to the Open Championship at Royal St. George's. I'll give you some of my bets as well. I got a great Victor Hovland story for you, and I'll give you a little bit of history of Royal St. George's, which will host the Open next week. You're listening to The Golf Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Golf Show continues to roll along here. Brent Gunning flying solo. And, you know, would you really be friends with someone if they didn't twist the knife occasionally? The guy you often hear in this time slot alongside me, Sam McKee, he just had to let me know that he hopes I'm doing well, and then he's about to tee it up at lovely Predator Ridge in BC. Of course, you can listen to us right now. You're listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan here in Toronto, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, or Sportsnet 960 The Fan in Calgary. As always, you can hit us up on the text line 590-590. Please include your name and location. Want to know where you're teeing it up this weekend. Always, always, always want to have that on the go as well. The text line is where you can reach me. Let me know what's going on. I want to give you some bets as well before the show is done today. Of course, you know, John Deere, that's going to wrap up tomorrow. Obviously, you may be able to find a little value depending on what the leaderboard looks like at the end of today. But of course, everybody looking ahead to the Open Championship as well. Joining me now on the golf show here again on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Stephen Hennessy, Deputy Managing Editor for Golf Digest and the host of the Be Right podcast. Stephen, how you doing this morning?
Brent, thanks so much for having me on. I'm doing great. Pumped for the British Open coming up, and we got the Scottish Open on this morning. So it's a good time in golf.
Well, let's just settle an age-old golf debate right now. I notice you called it the British Open. I try to call it the Open. How do you feel? Is it a tomato-tomato? It doesn't matter. Do you ever just go open? Are you strictly a British Open guy? Where are you at on what we call this tournament on this side of the pond?
A great question. I think, you know, it's a little early. I hadn't had my full cup of coffee yet. I think the Open is the proper way to call it because you're not offending anyone one way or the other. I think the Open Championship is how the other side of the pond obviously refers to it. That's what it was. That's the name of it over there. And, you know, us over here in North America, you know, we distinguish it from the U.S. Open, I suppose, by calling it the British Open. But, you know, that gets people in the U.K. a little angry. So, yeah, I think the Open just like that is the perfect way to call it. At Golf Digest, we do say British Open in our headlines because we know people in North America search for British Open for their content about the Open, but you really can't win these days when you debate something like this as colloquial as that.
That's right. You really can't win. I think what we can all do is we can all agree that champion golfer of the year, the first time we heard it, we rolled our eyes a little bit, but now we love it, and it's definitely part of the vernacular. I got to give you credit. Now, I think this was you. It could have been one of the other guys in your podcast. I believe it was you, though. Was it you who nailed Cam Davis at the Rocket Mortgage last week? Was that you, or was that one of your podcast partners?
I did. That was me on the podcast, and at golfdigest.com, we have our weekly betting column, and one of our contributors, Brandon Gandula, nailed him there too. So yeah, we provided a winner a couple ways, and at 100-1, that, you know, pretty sweet.
Yeah, obviously, you've got to love that. That's got to be one of the longer shots you've hit in the this year or the last little bit, I'd imagine, for sure, right?
I think that's the longest shot I've hit in golf for sure. Yeah, that was. And that was awesome. And it seemed like a lot of people were on him too. It didn't seem like, you know, my pick was out of the blue, but, you know, I saw like 10 to 15 people were also on Cam Davis, you know, on Twitter, all these golf guys I follow. So, you know, one of these really young, talented kids who kind of tears apart par fives. And that was the key last week at Rocket Mortgage. So, you know, anytime you could hit a winner in golf, it's so tough to predict winners in golf. But at 100-1, that was that's going to stay in the memory bank for a while.
See, you say you liked seeing that some of the other people were on it. And I guess on one hand, that makes it feel less flukish, for lack of a better term. But boy, it would feel great if you're just out there chest puffed, you and you alone had Cam Davis. Like, I feel like it had to take just a little bit away that it was a more popular underdog, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. If I was alone on that island as Cam Davis, I would have definitely been pumping my chest more. But it's fun, you know, there's this whole community amongst golf gamblers on Twitter that, you know, we all kind of give each other picks and we root for each other. So in that way, it was kind of a communal win. And, you know, always fun to be celebrating a big win with the boys like that.
For sure. So do you think it's kind of almost a little look like we all get jacked up for the majors? We're going to get super excited for the Open next week. We got excited when Jon Rahm won at the U.S. Open. Like, we get excited for all these things. But if you really want to dive in and get nitty gritty with the gambling, it feels like some of these, you know, it's unfair to call it an alternate field event because this is the PGA Tour stop. With so many of the top guys being over in Europe this week, it feels like an event like the John Deere would be a great place to kind of find some value and just kind of have more fun with names, finding value on names you just normally wouldn't look at.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, especially because we've seen a lot of winners at the John Deere in the past be, you know, really long shots. Michael Kim comes to mind a few years ago. Dylan Fratelli, when he won in 2019, definitely wasn't a known entity over here in North America. So, it was a fun week to handicap. I do have a few names at the top of the leaderboard that I'm hoping for, come through for me again. But, not the biggest names. Obviously, the biggest names are over at the Scottish Open, but it makes it interesting when you put some dollars on a guy who's 100-1, something like that, and then they're in the mix come the weekend. That's really all you could ask for.
Yeah, it really is. You mentioned the Scottish Open. I want to dive into something that happened over there, albeit, maybe this guy would say it affected his play. Rory McIlroy, you retweeted out the video, so I know you saw it, of the guy just walking over and kind of grabbing the 7-iron and head cover out of his bag. This is the kind of second time in the last handful of weeks we've seen this. Of course, there was the guy who had that beautiful swing. He was showing off on one of the fairways at Torrey when he just ran into the fairway there. Now we have this guy grabbing clubs out of McIlroy's bag. Is this something golf kind of needs to be a little weary about? Like, we're all learning how to go back into society, and maybe us as golf fans need to be checked on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. Torrey Pines, that was interesting, and, you know, the guy had like a hula hoop on or something, and that was an odd sight, and to be, you know, on the final day of a major especially. But this was even a little more spooky because this guy got so close to Rory McIlroy and Jon Rahm, picked the club out of his bag, and, you know, no one knew what to make of it. I think part of it might have been the European Tour has been very clever in its social media videos in the past. So I think part of Rory's reaction might have been, oh, this might be some spoof that the European Tour is doing. Maybe I should go along with it. But, you know, it was a Thursday, so the first round of a competition, you know, the social media team knows better than to mess with Rory before he's about to tee off. So that was odd. It's just, I can't believe the lack of security that someone could get up to, you know, two of the best players in the world and do something like that. You know, I guess it's a little different over there in Scotland. They're, you know, a little more friendly, I suppose. And even, you know, when they were taking the guy off the course, like, you know, over here, you know, there would have been a policeman like grabbing him and, you know, maybe pinning him down on the ground. But, you know, there was none of that. It was kind of just like him, you know, they grabbed his hand and, you know, and walked off the tee box. But definitely eerie. And I think you're right. I think we got to be cognizant about that going forward. And the interesting thing is a lot of these top players in other sports have their own personal security. I wouldn't be surprised that this sort of an event, sparks a guy like Jon Rahm and Rory McIlroy to have someone following them around just in case something like this happens. It's a good thing they didn't get hurt at all.
So it's funny. This is just reminding me of this now. I did not intend to bring this up, but I'm talking to Stephen Hennessy of Golf Digest here on the Golf Show. Brent Gunning with you this morning until 9. When I was lucky enough to go to, saved up, I splurged, went to the Tiger Woods golf tournament in the Bahamas, Hero World Challenge. And I kid you not, they had walking with each group two police officers. Now, these are like old school English because it's like, you know, the colonialism down there. And they have got just the batons with it. And it was just a great subtle message of like, you don't need guys with guns or anything like that. But it was a very subtle, you want to keep these guys safe because it is kind of the double-edged sword. Because I've made the point time and time again that there is no better ticket in professional sports. Like, you spend whatever your kind of general admission ticket is for the tour event that comes closest to you. You cannot get closer. You cannot get better access to the brightest stars of this game. And it's just something that I think we got to be kind of careful of because we don't want to lose that access. Like, think about how great all those videos are that we've seen throughout the years of Tiger Woods hitting those shots and the gallery is right on top of him or any bright star today. Like, it's such an important part of the game, and I would hate to lose it.
No, that's a great point. That is what makes, attending a golf tournament so great. And I think you're right, just having a couple security guys like we're down there at the Hero World Challenge, just, the threat of, taking you out in case you misbehave a little bit. I think that's really all we need. So maybe the Scottish security will be a bit better next year.
Yeah, there you go. And again, talking with Stephen Hennessy here. So we do have the Open Championship coming up. Have you started to look at any odds yet? Obviously, the odds are going to change a little bit depending on what happens this week. You get a Jon Rahm win in Scotland. Boy, that would shake some things up. But is there anybody you're kind of looking at targeting yet, or are you still mostly focused on the John Deere this weekend?
I've started to take a little bit of a look. And the interesting thing for me was I had Lee Westwood kind of circled going into this week. And now I look at the Scottish Open leaderboard and he's right at the top. So I better put in my bet before his odds get, slashed down in half. I think he's still 50-1 at most books over here. And, maybe he would get slashed to like 35 or 40. But I think Lee Westwood's interesting because we've seen, we saw Darren Clark in 2011 win over there. I just think a true knowledge of Lynx golf is going to be, a prerequisite to play well over there. But the thing, Brent, I really can't, I'm debating in my mind is, we've had a couple fluky winners the last two times at Royal St. George's. So, Darren Clark, I'd call a little fluky. Obviously, he had a great career before his win, but he was older. No one really saw that coming at all. He was about 100-1 or higher when he won. And then before that, we had Ben Curtis, who was definitely fluky. No one really knew who Ben Curtis was at all. But the interesting thing is the other names on those leaderboards were all the best players in the world. If we remember back to 2003, Tiger Woods was up there. Davis Love III, who was, one of the best players in the world at that time, he was the leader going into the round and struggled. And then in 2011, Dustin Johnson probably had the best chance to win. He kind of yanked his two iron out of bounds going down the stretch. Phil Mickelson was up there, and Phil was in the top 10 in the world. So, what I'm trying to debate in my mind is, do I go to the best players in the world, like Jon Rahm, like Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, or, is it going to be someone older like a Lee Westwood or even more obscure than him who's familiar with Lynx golf but doesn't have quite the the pedigree of some of these other top guys. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of my handicapping. I'm debating that. I'm still going to do a little more research, but Lee Westwood has my attention for sure. And I think a lot of people are going to be drawn to Louis Oosthuizen too after his major success the last two times at the PGA and the U.S. Open. He's 22-1. That's a heavy price to pay for Louis. He's got the same odds as guys like Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, and Victor Hovland, those kind of guys. So, I'm not sure if I'm ready to pay that kind of a price, but I'm sure he's going to be a popular pick this week.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about the Open Championship. Like, you take one little peek at that forecast and you with a lot of other, a lot of times when I'm looking at the odds for, be it the Masters or the PGA or the U.S. Open, I kind of start with a pool of 20 guys and it doesn't get much bigger than that of names you can even really kind of consider for outright winners. And, with the Open Championship and especially when you lay out the history of the venue like you just did, yeah, you can go a lot of places. I do wonder, just thinking aloud here, and this is totally just Ryder Cup demons living in my brain, but I do wonder if 2021 Ian Poulter is all that different from 2011 Darren Clark. I don't know. Just thinking aloud here. He's got the mojo going on. He'll be on the side of the pond he loves. Just throwing that one at you quickly, Stephen.
That is a perfect comparison. I was actually going to bring him up to about 100-1 or so. He's 45 years old. That's what Darren Clark was when he won. And yeah, I can see it. He's playing okay over in Scotland, too. So it's a Ryder Cup year, as you mentioned. I'm definitely going to be betting on Ian Poulter this week.
All right, there we go. Hopefully we can call each other and laugh about this in a couple of weeks' time at how well Ian Poulter did. First time for everything that I'll be cheering for Ian Poulter if I get a bet in on him. Stephen, really enjoyed the chat this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Brent. Enjoy.
There he goes. Stephen Hennessy, Deputy Managing Editor for Golf Digest, host of the Be Right podcast there. And as I mentioned, if you're looking to land some long shots, he's not a bad guy to look after. He had Cam Davis winning the Rocket Mortgage. That was last week there. Love the chat with him. It was funny. He was talking a little bit about the 2011 Open. That's when Darren Clark won. And boy, as much as things change, they certainly don't, because Darren Clark won, and I don't think he'll be in the mix. But the guys who finished tied for second were Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson. And, of course, both of those guys have won majors within the past couple of years. Thomas Bjorn, former Ryder Cup captain in the mix. And I have to mention it, Anthony Kim was tied for fifth with Ricky Fowler the last time the Open Championship was held at Royal St. George's. They'll be back there next week teeing it up. John Rahm, a guy I definitely like to win next week. But when you look at those odds, there's just no way he's going to be give you any type of value. Maybe you get him at a top five or a top 10. We'll take a look at some odds. Also, I got a great Victor Hovland story to tell you. One segment left here on the Golf Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Couple of minutes here on the Golf Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thank you so much for listening. I want to thank everybody who helped me put the show together today. Producer J.R. Manitad. Technical Director Derek Brendeo, of course, want to thank my guests as well. Stephen Hennessy just joined us from Golf Digest, and earlier on in the show, my buddy John McCarthy, kicking around all things Open Championship. I bring John McCarthy on. You know we're going to get into Nick Taylor. And as he mentioned, if you're playing Mario Kart against your kids, you want to use Toad. Two things I wanted to flag for you before the show finishes up today. Last week, myself and Sam McKee, we had Rick Young on to discuss the Toronto review of its golf course operations. This is a survey on the city's website. You can simply Google a review of City Golf Course Operations Toronto, and it'll take you to the survey there. If you're a golfer who uses the municipal courses, get out there and have your say. I don't need to rehash everything we talked about with Rick last week, but this is a really important thing. Golf is important at all price points and places in this wonderful country, and that includes the city's municipal courses. So if you enjoy them like I do, please get there and have your say on that survey. I believe that closes today, so you want to make sure you get that in as well. Also, I wanted to flag this for you because, you know, we've all had our little moments where you run into somebody famous or something like that. But I feel pretty bad for these guys who are playing at a 3:50 tee time in Norway. Why? Well, they show up for their tee time, and there's about 200 to 300 people waiting around the first tee. And that's because it got out that Victor Hovland, who's taken some time off, he's not at the Scottish Open, he's not at the John Deere, he was just playing a friendly round with his buddy, and word got out to the Norwegian golfing public. And there was a crowd of about 200 to 300 people there. Now, the group of guys ahead of him, one said his hands were visibly shaking as he was waiting to tee off. Well, there was, again, a couple hundred people waiting to watch, I'm assuming, this mid-handicapper at best play out there. One time, I kind of had to go off in front of about, I don't know, 25, 50 guys. And I wear an Apple Watch when I play golf, and my heart rate spiked about double what it normally is. So I can only imagine how the nerves were going for those guys there in Norway. But that's what makes this game great. Sometimes you just get a chance. Can you imagine? You're teeing it up in Dundas and Mac Hughes is around, or you're out in Smith's Falls and there's Brooke Henderson. Again, I want to thank everybody who joined the show today. My buddy Sam McKee will be back next week with me. We'll have the golf show for you also at noon. Ian Leggett will have you covered with RBC Off the Tee. That's across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Also, I'm wishing my buddy Sam McKee good birdie luck out there. He's at Predator Ridge in BC. You got the Scottish Open going on. You got the John Deere Classic, including Nick Taylor in contention. So you want to keep an eye on that. Next time I'm back, I'll be talking to you about the Open Championship. This is the Golf Show with Brent Gunning on the Sportsnet Radio Network.